Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So a reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, 3rd Canto, Chapter 2, Text 19. Jasta Bhavadbir Nanu Rajasuye Chaidyasya Krishnam Dvisato Pi Siddhi Yam Yogina Samspriyanti Samyag Yogena Kas Tad Viraham Saheta. Drishta Bhavad Bir Nanu Rajasuye Drishta Bhavad Bir Nanu Rajasuye Chaidyasya Krishnam Dvisato Pisidhi Chaidyasya Krishnam Dvisato Pisidhi Yam Yogina Samspriyanti Samyag Yam Yogina Samspriyanti Samyag Yogena Kastad Viraham Saheta Yogena Kastad Viraham Saheta Drishta Bhavadbir Nanu Rajasuye Chaidyasya Krishnam Dvisato Pisidhi Yam Yogina Samspriyanti Samyag Yogena Kastad Viraham Saheta. Others, please. Vaishnavis. Okay. Drishta, it has been seen. Bhavadbi, by your good self. Nanu.
Of course. Rajasuya. In the assembly of the Rajasuya sacrifice performed by Maharaj Yudhisthira. Chaidyasya. Of the king of Chedi. Sisupal. Krishnam. Unto Krishna. Dvi Sataha. Envying. Api. In spite of. Siddhi. Success. Yam. Which. Yogina. The yogis. Samspriyanti. Verily desire. Samyak. Fully. Yogena. By performance of yoga. Ka. Who. Tat. His. Viraham. Separation. Sahita. Can tolerate. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. This is Uddhava speaking. You have personally seen how the king of Chedi, Sisupal, achieved success in yoga practice, although he hated Lord Krishna. Even the actual yogis aspire after such success with great interest by performance of their various practices. Who can tolerate separation from him? And of course, he's speaking to Vidura. Purport. Lord Krishna's causeless mercy was exhibited in the great assembly of Maharaj Yudhisthira. He was merciful even to his enemy, the king of Chedi, who always tried to be an envious rival of the Lord. Because it is not possible to be a bona fide rival of the Lord, the king of Chedi was extremely malicious toward Lord Krishna. In this, he was like many other asuras, such as Kamsa and Jarasandha. In the open assembly of the Rajasuya sacrifice performed by Maharaj Yudhisthira, Sisupal insulted Lord Krishna, and he was finally killed by the Lord. But it was seen by everyone in the assembly that a light flashed out of the body of the king of Chedi and merged into the body of Lord Krishna. This means that Chedi Raj achieved the salvation of attaining oneness with the Supreme, which is a perfection most desired by the jnanis and yogis, for which they execute their different types of transcendental activities. It is a fact that persons who are trying to understand the Supreme Truth by their personal endeavors of mental speculation or mystic powers of yoga achieve the same goal as others who are personally killed by the Lord. Both achieve the salvation of merging in the Brahmajyoti rays of the transcendental body of the Lord. The Lord was merciful even to his enemy, and the success of the king of Chedi was observed by everyone who was present in the assembly. Vidura was also present there, and therefore Uddhava referred the incident to his memory. Om Agina Timadanda Shajananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Don Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam. So, as I mentioned, this is Uddhava who's speaking, and he's speaking to Vidura. So we're very fortunate in that we're being allowed to hear some really high-level Krishna Katha, you know, being spoken by one of the topmost devotees of Krishna. If you had to make a list of devotees, you know, like the top 10, you know, sometimes you see these lists of the top 10, this or the, okay, the gopis would be on the top, the tippy top, the gopis, but Uddhava wouldn't be too far down the list in terms of, you know, the topmost devotees. And that's not just my opinion. I'm going to support that statement with a statement by Krishna that we'll be coming to further on as we progress here. And it's a couple chapters ahead. Krishna says, "Now I shall leave the vision of this mundane world, and I see that Uddhava, the foremost of my devotees, is the only one who can be directly entrusted with knowledge about me. Uddhava is not inferior to me in any way, because he is never affected by the modes of material nature. Therefore, he may remain in this world in order to disseminate specific knowledge of the personality of Godhead. And it goes on. So that's a statement by Krishna. It gives us, you know, some understanding, better, further insight into the exalted position of Uddhava. Very, very great devotee. And Vidura, well, he's no slouch either. Vidura was the son of Vyasadeva. Vyasadeva was his father. And there's this little story behind that. Vidura was, in his previous birth, Yamaraj, who's one of the 12 Mahajans, and also Prabhupada refers to him in some purport as an eternal associate of Krishna. So here's Uddhava, you know, one very, very elevated, exalted devotee speaking to another. So you can understand that the katha, you know, the discussion is at the topmost level. And we're very fortunate that we're being allowed to kind of tune in to that. And it's sections like this in the Srimad Bhagavatam that give the reason why Srila Vyasadeva, right at the beginning of the Bhagavatam, there's that very, very famous verse where he says, I'm pretty sure it's Vyasadeva is still speaking at this point, Nigama Kalpataro Galitam Palam Sukamukat Amrita Dravyasamyutam Pipata Bhagavatam Rasam Alayam Mohor Mohor Rasika Bhuvi Bhavakaha. And that's Vyasadeva still speaking at that point in the Bhagavatam. I think it's chapter 1, text 4. And he's saying that this is the topmost stuff. This is what you're going to be getting here in the Srimad Bhagavatam. This is relished by the liberated souls. This isn't just, you know, some introductory. This isn't KC 101. This is very elevated subject matter. So that's what we're being given the opportunity to hear here in these two chapters, Remembrance of Lord Krishna and the Lord's Pastimes out of Vrindavan. Basically, Uddhava's giving a beautiful, elaborate, simultaneously elaborate, beautiful summary synopsis of Krishna's life. And he's going through, you know, one pastime after another in more or less chronological order. But it's saturated with his feelings of love and devotion for Krishna, his feelings of intense separation for Krishna. So this is like, you know, it's really amazing. So getting back to today's verse here. So Uddhava is speaking today about, at this point, about the incident with the king of Chedi, Sisupal. And once again, he's speaking to Vidura, and he's pointing out, he's making the point to Vidura that this Sisupal, he achieved success in the yoga practice, although he hated Lord Krishna. So he's trying to draw our attention to the point of how merciful Krishna is. And in the purport, Prabhupada does say, the very first sentence says, Lord Krishna's causeless mercy was exhibited in the great assembly of Maharaj Yudhisthira. So this is the point, what he's trying to draw our attention to. And it's interesting, and one thought that came to my mind in relation to this was, he's using the example of how Krishna, he killed Sisupal, and by doing so, Sisupal got Sayuja Mukti. He received that the liberation of merging into the Brahman effulgence. And here it's being presented as a pretty impressive thing. You know, it's being pointed out by Uddhava and then reiterated in the purport by Srila Prabhupada that this is something that's sought after by the jnanis, by their philosophical speculation, mental speculation, Prabhupada calls it, and by the yogis, by their mystic powers, and etc. and this was achieved by Uddhava. This is achieved by Sisupal, just by getting killed by Krishna. So this is an exhibition of Krishna's mercy. Now, it's interesting that elsewhere, this liberation of Sayuja Mukti is not being is not presented as a very great thing, you know, a great, very great achievement, because as we've heard many, many times, I never learned, unfortunately, had the full memory of the verse, Aruja Krishna, you know, that verse, you, Padanti Ada, Nadrasama, you know, I can't remember the Sanskrit, but unless you take shelter at the lotus feet of Krishna, you come back down. And devotees reject that liberation of Sayuja Mukti. So, and also, and Prabhupada elaborates upon that at different places in his books and in his purports. But a significant thing here is, you know, and overall in devotional service, you have the two aspects which I won't say they're competing, but they're kind of like both in action, and they have to, there's always like a, not maybe another word for competition is something to do with their balance. One is the Siddhanta and one is Bhav. Siddhanta refers to the philosophical conclusion of the Shastra. That's a very important consideration in all aspects of devotional service. But another very important consideration, and perhaps an equally or even more important consideration, is Bhav, the feeling, the genuine transcendental feeling. So what's, I think, significant here is this is Uddhava expressing his genuine, his emotions, which because he's a Nityasiddha, because he's such an elevated devotee, are very significant because these are genuine transcendental emotions that we're hearing expressed by Uddhava. So he's using this as an example why... point that, oh, Krishna is so merciful. He's going to give other examples too. Coming up in subsequent verses, he's going to give the example of Putana and maybe some others as well. But right now he's giving this example of Sisupala as an example of the extraordinary mercy of Lord Krishna to even somebody who was his enemy, basically, and hated him. He awarded this Sayuja Mukti. So, you know, once again, it's his feeling. But the feelings of a pure devotee on the transcendental platform are not some trifling affair. They're very significant. And this is, I would say, I would give this as an example of how an occasion on which the Bhav has superseded or eclipsed the importance of the Siddhanta in one sense. In that, because once again, somebody could argue, well, that's not, what's the big deal there? You know, I mean, Sayuja Mukti, that's Krishna's enemies get Sayuja, you know, it's not that great an achievement. But what's important here is Uddhava's feelings. And one example of this that came to my mind, of this point of how sometimes the feeling, the Bhav, even surpasses the importance of the Siddhanta, was the pastime with when Lord Chaitanya, before he took sannyas, when he had the school. Remember, he was a teacher at one point. He had a little school there. And he had a lot of students. Maybe it wasn't such a little school. He had a lot of students. So one day, Lord Chaitanya was chanting the names of the gopis, right? Was he just chanting gopi, 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 or was he chanting the names of the gopis? One or the other, maybe both, I don't know. But so he was doing that, and he was in complete ecstasy, chanting the names of the gopis. So one of the students came and saw Lord Chaitanya doing that, and so he pointed out to Lord Chaitanya, he's a little arrogant mood, that, you know, what are you, why are you chanting the names of the gopis? Why are you wasting your time in this way? In the Shastras, it's clearly stated that one should chant the names of the Supreme Lord, Hari. You know, Harinama, Harinama. You know, he quoted some verse like that. And so he made a good point, right? I mean, Siddhanta-wise, you know, in terms of philosophical conclusion, huh? Well, yeah, we'll get into that. But so he made his point, and one could say, well, hey, he's supported by the Shastra. He's making a point supported by the Shastra. And Lord Chaitanya, you know, his response to that was, get out of here! You know, he got so upset. Lord Chaitanya was like furious that he was disturbing his mood like that. You see, so there's an example of how the Bhav surpass was more important in this case, the true transcendental emotion of Lord Chaitanya. He didn't want to, don't bother me with this Shastra conclusion. So there's a hierarchy there. There's you have to be able to discriminate what's the more important. So here, what's more important is Uddhava's expressing his feelings. It's not a time to argue whether, well, if that's such an important thing that, he got that kind of liberation, that's not such an important liberation. No. What's important here is that this is Uddhava trying to express how merciful Lord Krishna is. So, now, there's an interesting juxtaposition here because, we're hearing from Uddhava, who we just described was a very super elevated personality, one of the most elevated personalities. He's speaking to Vidura, who's also a super elevated personality. And they're talking about Sisupal, who was, at least existentially speaking, at this point in his existence, was a very degraded personality because, as mentioned here, he was an enemy of Krishna. He was a hater of Krishna. Of course, we know that Sisupal was either Jaya or Vijaya. I'm not sure which one. And this was the third birth, and this was all a pastime. But at least, for all apparent purposes at this point in his existence, he's a big hater, an enemy, and a hater of Krishna. And just a little bit about the story of his life, since it's, that's today's, the subject of today's verse, more or less, is that when he was born, he was, I can't remember, he had some weird features. He had four arms and two in the front. Did he have more eyes than two eyes? How many eyes did he have? Okay. But anyway, three eyes. He had three eyes, right. And his mother, right away, could understand that this kid is not auspicious. And there was some sort of prediction that he was going to be killed by Krishna. And she was aware of that. She was aware of that. So she went and she appealed to Krishna, that Krishna, please, don't kill my son. I've heard some sort of a, what's it called? Prediction? You're going to kill my son in the future. Please don't kill my son. And Krishna said, okay, well, because Krishna knows, past, present, and future. He knows everything. So Krishna went, well, I will allow your son to, 1,000, I think it was the number I remember. What? It's 100? Okay. I will allow him to commit 100 offenses before I do anything, take any, retaliate in any way. So, okay, that was some concession there. So that, at least I heard that. I don't care if I heard that from Prabhupada, just on those Mahabharata movies that were produced by the government of India. But anyway, that's there. So Sisupal was, Prabhupada definitely states in his purport that even before he was able to speak properly, even before he could speak properly, he was blaspheming Krishna. And his brother, Dantavakra, was, they were two peas in a pod, basically. They're, those giant vijayas. So anyway, so that was his early days of Sisupal. And then later on, the whole thing got exacerbated or aggravated when Krishna was supposed to marry Rukmini. And it was kind of like the, common knowledge. The word was out, so to speak. Rukmini's father was Maharaj Bhishmaka, and he was totally in favor of that. He wanted, I just reread the chapter in the Krishna book. The people in general, it was kind of like understood. I think Prabhupada even used that word, that was what was going to happen eventually, that Krishna was going to marry Rukmini. But what happened was, well, his oldest son, Maharaj Bhishmaka's oldest son, Rukmi, was not in favor of that idea. He wanted his sister, his younger sister, to marry Sisupal. And maybe this is an example of how do you get in the entanglements of material life. Because, Maharaj Bhishmaka wasn't into it. He wanted his daughter to marry Krishna. But here's his oldest son, grown up, possibly very powerful himself in his own way, just a similar situation to perhaps what was experienced by Dhritarashtra and Duryodhana. Dhritarashtra was influenced by your Duryodhana. If you take Duryodhana out of the picture, Dhritarashtra wasn't that bad, I mean, Duryodhana was kind of like rotten to the core, and Dhritarashtra was not quite to that. That's the impression I get, you know, from overall from everything I've read about the two. So it's a similar sort of a situation in that Maharaj Bhishmaka didn't want to do that, but you know, here's his oldest son. He's pushing for that, and what can he, you know, it's kind of like he's entangled, and he was going along with it, reluctantly, unwillingly, not happily. So anyway, so all the arrangements were there, and then it was getting close to the time, you know, for the wedding, basically, and so Sisupal was there, and. And Rukmini, of course, you know, she wanted to marry Krishna, and she sent a message with a Brahmin to Krishna to, you know, to tell him what was going on, tip him off. And so meantime, the wedding date was arriving, and Sisupal was there, and not only was Sisupal there, but he had like friends come. His friends were also big demons like himself. There was Jarasandha, who was very powerful, you know. There was his brother, Dantavakra. There was another demon, Vidarata, and Pondraka. They were all there with all their military phalanxes and this and that, you know, to sort of celebrate the wedding. And in case anything was, you know, going to happen, they were there to contest it. And they were expecting maybe something to happen. They were kind of expecting. So anyway, so when Krishna got the message from the messenger, and he went there by himself. He just went there by himself on his chariot. And, you know, but Balaram could understand what was going on. So Balaram kind of followed, unbeknownst to Krishna. And he camped out with all his troops outside the city, Kundina. And anyway, sure enough, you know, Krishna came when Rukmini was coming back from the Durga temple after worshiping like that. And he just grabbed her and, nicely, and, you know, took her and put her up on his chariot and started, not in like a, you know, a Wild West movie, but just kind of like very, what's the word, majestically and, okay, I'm taking Rukmini. Has anybody got anything to say about it? And he just kind of started slowly pulling away. And at first, nobody was doing anything. Nobody was opposing, you know. And then Jarasandha, he spoke up and he said, what's going on here? He said, are we going to let Krishna take Rukmini right from our midst without even, like, challenging him, offering him some opposition? How can we call ourselves Kshatriyas if we do that? And so he kind of got everybody else fired up. And then they said, okay, yeah, you're right. You know, so they attacked. Krishna's pulling out and they're attacking. And meantime, Balaram comes in. All of a sudden, you know, that was the cue. Balaram shows up with all his troops and there's a big battle. And so what happened was, All the opponents, you know, Jarasandha and all those people, Dantavakra, they were all getting defeated all over the place. And it was a big, that was like a massacre, the way it was described in the Krishna book. It was like a big massacre. So at some point, these commanders in chief, you know, like Jarasandha, et cetera, they just said, okay, well, I think that's enough, you know, because they were losing badly, and they didn't want to just lose everything, including their own lives, perhaps. So they just decided to back off and let Krishna go, you know, with Rukmini. And then when they went back there, Sisupal actually, when you're from the Krishna book, it seems like he didn't actually go out there to fight himself. He was just back there. And they just consoled him with some flattery. They said, you know, these things happen. You're a Kshatriya, you're a great king, but, you know, this providence is very powerful, and even if you did get her, you wouldn't be able to enjoy her for very long, because that's, you know. Anyway, they just kind of gave him some flattering words to kind of pacify him, and then off they went. They decided it just wasn't worth the, you know, the risk to lose more. So that made him, of course, how do you think that made Sisupal feel? Having his, what he considered was his bride-to-be stolen by Krishna. That kind of increased his hatred of Krishna and his envy of Krishna, which brings us to the final pastime, basically. Some time passed after that, and then Maharaj Yudhisthira was performing the Rajasuya sacrifice, and, you know, And all these great elevated personalities were invited to attend from all around. And Sisupal was an invited guest, apparently, because, you know, he was a Kshatriya, after all. And he was part of the royal order. And he had some respectable status in society. So he was invited. Anyway, so the sacrifice gets underway. And Maharaj Yudhisthira was elected as the person who was, you know, given responsibility to execute the sacrifice, the yaj. Well, I'm not going to do the Rukmi part. When Rukmi gets killed? No, wait. What you're saying is correct, but this is like Sisupal is kind of the star of the show, right? I know, but this today, the class today is about Sisupal, so I'm going to focus on the Sisupal thing and that. I know that. But anyway, so now we're at the Raja. Thank you. We're at the Rajasuya sacrifice, and it's getting underway here. Maharaj Yudhisthira is installed as, what do they call it, the Yajaman or something? Okay, yeah, you know, the chief, the president, so to speak. And then the next, traditionally, they select somebody to receive the first worship. What's the Sanskrit for that? I can't remember. What's the Sanskrit for the first worship? Anyway, it's mentioned in a story in the Krishna, I can't remember what it is. So, the, you know, different, huh? Yeah, first worship. Anyway, so the, different people were being suggested, and because there were so many elevated, great personalities there, and the guests were kind of, oh yeah, that's possible, that's a good one. And then Sahadev spoke. Sahadev, one of the youngest of the Pandavas, or Sahadev and Nakula, both equally young, and so he spoke out very strongly in favor of, I think Krishna should get the first worship, and Maharaj Yudhisthira was very happy to hear that because. That's, you know, who Maharaj Yudhisthira was intending to, but he didn't want to be the one who put him forward. But so Sahadev was putting him forward, and a lot of, you know, most of the guests were, by and large, I mean, practically everybody was in favor of that. And then, at that point, that's when Sisupal kind of comes into the picture again. He couldn't stand it when he heard that Krishna being, and he just interrupted basically and started speaking. And once again, he was an invited guest. He's part of the royal order. So immediately he started speaking, you know, saying, how could we possibly be listening to this Sahadev, this young boy? What does he know? And, you know, there's so many people here who are far more deserving of the first worship than Krishna. I mean, there's all these great sages capable of delivering, you know, many, many fallen people and et cetera. And any one of them could be, you know, get the first worship and that would be appropriate. But how could he say Krishna? I mean, we don't even know Krishna's caste. We don't even know Krishna's activities. He's such a wild card. He left Mathura, you know, the highly enlightened association of the people. Mathura built himself a fort out in the ocean off of Dwarka, and where there's no discussion of the Vedas, and whenever he comes back, he just harasses the people on the mainland. Well, you know, how could he? And he goes on. He was going on and on like that, right? And he was getting more and more vitriolic, you know, more and more kind of envy and hatred was coming out in his comments. So it got to the point, and Krishna was just sitting there, okay, you know, whatever. He wasn't, you know, wasn't getting all disturbed or anything like that. But Sisupal was going on and on and on. And, huh? Yeah, this, in some versions he was counting. And so meantime, the guests were getting agitated. You know, the guests were devotees of Krishna, and they were getting very agitated. And Sisupal's going on. So at some point, the kings who, you know, as I said, he was able to speak for kind of like a couple minutes because they just didn't expect, nobody expected that. And then when he first got it started, they thought, okay, he's going to just make his points, and then he's going to quiet down, and then we're going to overrule him. He's entitled to his opinion, but we'll overrule him, and we will select Krishna. But he didn't you know, he wasn't backing down. He just kept going. So they just, you know, some of the kings who were in opposition, a lot of them, they started speaking out against him. You know, they said, hey, you can't talk like that about, what right do you have to speak like this? You know, getting riled up. The whole thing was heating up. And they were standing up. And in the meantime, Sisupal's shouting back at them. Then he redirects his blasphemy and criticism towards them. And it was obviously it was kind of like, you know, they were a face off there. So meantime, so Sisupal's, you know, the kings are kind of starting to draw out their swords. Okay. You know, and Sisupal's starting to draw out his sword. So there's going to be some actual violence in just a matter of seconds. And Krishna could see this, and he just thought, well, this is the way Prabhupada explains it in the Krishna book, that Krishna didn't want the whole sacrifice to be disturbed like that, to be spoiled like that by all of a sudden, you know, violent outbreak right in the beginning. So Krishna just, he just went, all right. And he just, with the Sudarsan chakra, which was described as sharp like a razor blade, he just severed Sisupal's head from his body. And everybody went, whoa, initially, you know, because like nobody was expecting that. And then that was when Sisupal's head came off his body. Then the next thing is like a double reaction, double decker. It's kind of, then his, as it's described here, his soul rose up above in the air there. And then the next thing they saw was the soul just merged into Krishna's body. It was like, whoa, two things, you know, two amazing things, one after the other. And so that was witnessed by everybody, Vidura included. So that was pretty far out. So then that was the end of Sisupal. So just to wrap it up, you know, so this is talking about Sisupal was a hater of Krishna, and that's not rare. According to, you know, something we might think, oh, Sisupal, you know, hardly anybody's like, no, a lot of people like Sisupal. Actually, according to, this is an excerpt from a lecture Prabhupada gave on the Chaitanya Charitamrita in 1967 in New York City. And he says something interesting about the position of, he gives us further insight into about hating Krishna. Okay, it's not such an uncommon thing. Prabhupada says, so far we are concerned, the conditioned soul, our business is to hate Krishna. That's all. What is God? God. The foolish people are assembled speaking of God. They are, and Prabhupada's referring to these people. Naturally, the conditioned souls, they are haters of God in this conditioned life. Just the opposite, in the spiritual world, they are by nature lovers of God. But here, being illusion, we think of God as our enemy, and we don't like God. We like this Maya. And then Prabhupada goes on to say about the haters of God. He says, therefore, because they have forgotten Krishna, they are averse to Krishna. Therefore, the result is that perpetually they are entangled in this material world, which is what we see going on today. So that's some insight into the haters of Krishna and their fate or their, yeah. But then on the other hand, there's the Nityasiddha. There's the lovers of Krishna, such as Uddhava, such as Vidura, and their business is to love Krishna, right? And also to induce other people to love Krishna. And then a great example of that, and this will be the last point I make, is Srila Prabhupada was a lover of Krishna, a Nityasiddha devotee, a lover of Krishna, and you could see what his business was. His business was to love Krishna. Just like every morning, you know, when we finish here at the class, when I go back to my apartment, my wife has the internet onto LA Live. And every day they've been playing Prabhupada, chanting bhajans, and you could just, it's a very impacting experience to hear Prabhupada chanting the bhajans. He chants like, in a very different way. You can feel it. Wait a second. There's something this mere person's experienced as different than like what I'm experiencing, you know? Very sobering. Anyway, so Prabhupada was a great lover of Krishna and tried to induce us to love Krishna. And here's an example of that and how he was like, he did it in such an amazing way. This took place right here in New Dwarka in 1975, right here upstairs in that in his quarters there. So Prabhupada was meeting. This is when they're having that marathon to complete the Chaitanya Charitamrita in 2 months. So Prabhupada was meeting with some senior devotees. So he was up there, and at one point, Hayagriva comes up the stairs, and he goes into the room. So Prabhupada was speaking, and when Hayagriva entered the room, Prabhupada went, "Oh, how are you, Hayagriva Prabhu? How are you? You look better. You are looking better, brighter than when I saw you in New Vrindavan last. You have got so many talents for serving Krishna. Everyone has got. That I am speaking. We have to utilize it." So that just, I don't know why. I just remembered that the other day, and it really stuck in my mind. This Prabhupada, that was his persona, you know, encouraging people to be devotees of Krishna. And I love this point here. We all have got so many. He said, "You have got so many talents for serving Krishna." He's encouraging. Everyone has got that I am speaking. We have to utilize it. So that's Prabhupada's message, you know. We are servants of Krishna. Everybody's got so many talents for serving Krishna. And he would encourage people, use your talents to serve Krishna. So, Archita Prabhu, yeah.
Microphone is about to go. Thanks for the nice class. Just on that point about the Brahma Jyoti, because it may be confusing. Like you said, sometimes it's seen as something high and other times not. So the example I'd like to use is like how you react to some food that somebody gives you depends on the kind of food you eat regularly. Like for us, every day we're eating nice fresh prasadam. So if somebody gives you a bag of outdated potato chips on the street, you're going to go, "Oh, thank you," but you know, you're not into it. But for somebody who's starving, you give them a bag of outdated potato chips, it's like, "Whoa, you're so kind," and they dive into it. So the Brahma Jyoti depends on your perspective. For somebody who is merged into Krishna's activities, pastimes, a pure devotee, being in the Brahma Jyoti is obviously hellish. But if the king of Chedi, Shishupal, had been killed in a regular way, he would have gone to hell, to Patala Loka, being suffering in Rorava and all these
right, like Vena.
Yeah, he would have been suffering in hell, like anything. So to get promoted to the Brahma Jyoti is a high thing. It's a wonderful, merciful thing. Because in the Brahma Jyoti, you're not experiencing any pain. You're not experiencing any of the vagaries of normal material existence. It's just not the highest platform. Even Rupa Goswami says, yes, those Brahmanandis, they're experiencing some happiness. But that happiness is like a drop, less than a drop from the ocean of bhakti. You see? So it depends on what you're looking from. If you're suffering in the material world and you get promoted to the Brahma Jyoti, whoa, you're in heaven.
Yeah, thank you. That's a great comment. Thank you. That really helped. Yeah, Maharaj. We're getting another battery, so sorry for the delay here.
Thank you for your class, Prabhu. I'd like to make a few points. First of all, the marriage of Rukmini and the Rajasuya sacrifice are two distinct and different festivals. They have absolutely nothing to do with one another. Now, I'll finish up. The wedding or the marriage of Rukmini. Everything was just as you said. It came to the point where Jarasandha and a few of the others said, Shishupal stayed back. Okay? Jarasandha said, why are we fighting this battle for Shishupal? It's his battle. We're getting worn out. We're getting arrows in our body by this Krishna and Balaram. Let's get out of here. It's too much. Let him fight it. It's his battle because what has happened is Krishna has stolen Rukmini for his own purposes. She had been proposed for Shishupal. She was supposed to marry Shishupal. However, what happened to is that Krishna just rode up, picked her up when she was coming out of the temple, and picked her up, put her up on his chariot, and then drove off. That's when Jarasandha said, "What are we doing? Are we Kshatriyas just standing here and watching this going on? Let's go get him!" You know, so they got all the Kshatriyas racing after Krishna, and Balaram had just come in at that time to fight them off because Krishna was alone at that time. So the fight went on, and Krishna was so expert, so dexterous, so capable that they saw they could not beat Krishna. That's why when they said, let Shishupal fight him. Why are we fighting him? She's not our wife. It's his wife. Let him rescue her. So they left at that point. So when they left, Krishna was just racing off back to Dwarka. So what happened was that Rukmini, who was the brother of Rukmini, said, "We're all Kshatriyas. How can we let this cowherd go ahead and take my sister away? Let's go get him. What can he do against Kshatriyas? He's a cowherd. He milks cows. He's a nothing." That's basically what was said. So what happened is Rukmini ran after him. Then he made a promise. "If I do not kill Krishna, then," let's see, "if I don't kill Krishna, then I will move to a different area and set up my own place because I don't deserve to be in my father's great kingdom." So the fight went on. Rukmini fought Krishna. And Rukmini was in the chariot. She was like, he said, "Don't worry, my dear. I will take good care of you and certainly of him." So the fighting was going on. The arrows were going back and forth. And Krishna was winning, Rukmini was losing his arrows, he was losing his chariot, he was losing everything. Finally, he jumped off, he wanted to duel with Krishna, and Krishna just threw a few arrows into him. He didn't kill him, but got wounded. So then Krishna jumped off his chariot with his sword, and he started, he was a helpless Rukmini. So he started cutting off the hair of Rukmini. Now that's a very, very terrible thing to do to a Kshatriya, when you take off his beautiful hair. So what he did is he cut the hair in different designs so that he looked ridiculous. He looked foolish. A great Kshatriya looks like worse than a Shudra. That's the way he looked. That's the way he was taken. So anyway, what happened was that, of course, Rukmini, he lost that battle, and he went back, and he could not go back to his own kingdom. I forgot that. Anyone remember the name of
Kundina? Was his kingdom. He went. He set up his own little place, Bhojakata.
No,
Kundina.
Kundina was his original place, so he couldn't go back to Kundina, and he went and set up Bhojakata, which is the new place where he would go. And they would meet again much later on when they would have the gambling match, etc. I don't want to get into that. So anyway, that was the thing. Now, that was why Shishupal hated Krishna, because he stole the woman who was his proposed wife. If somebody takes your woman away, well, you're going to be angry. And he couldn't get her back either, because he knew that Krishna would then kill him. The only reason he desisted from killing him was Rukmini, who loved her brother and was very attached to her, said, "Please don't kill my brother." He said, "All right, due to you, I won't kill him." That's when he cut up his hair and then left him. That was the situation. Rajasuya has nothing to do with that wedding. I want to make it very clear. The Rajasuya sacrifice is a different thing.
Now, wait, just to clarify, are you kind of suggesting that I was mixing the two?
Yes.
Then you weren't listening carefully enough.
No, what I'm saying is...
I was just outlining Sisupal's life, and I was giving
different
incidents.
Can you repeat your question, please? Maybe I didn't hear it correctly.
Okay, were you suggesting that I was
confusing or conflating those two
incidents. Yeah, and I'll prove it to you and take out the book and show you they are completely different.
I know, and I wasn't suggesting that they were anything other than two different incidents. Well,
what was Roger Surya's sacrifice?
What I was doing was
You have to let me finish. You talked for 40 minutes. I wanted to talk for five minutes.
Okay, but you're...
And then I will bring out the book to show you that Roger Surya sacrifice has absolutely nothing
to do. I'm agreeing with that point, but the point is I'm not doing what you were suggesting. I didn't do, and I have witnesses here, which is suggesting
that
I did.
Are you separate?
Yeah, they're completely separate.
Okay, that's not what I got.
They're completely separate. I was pointing out different incidents in Sisupal's life to make the point why he was making a case for why he was
I didn't see why you would even bring it in, because it had nothing to do with the bride, with the wedding.
Okay, I'm going to end the class here, and we could discuss this afterwards. Well, thank you. Hare Krishna. Gantra Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada.
Hare Krishna.
My only